In session 8, we're going to focus on creating more and more value. We're going to switch our focus from work and effort, and we're going to aim our focus at creating more and more value. Now, one of the big obstacles that we must overcome in order to create more and more value is a mechanism that we humans carry around inside of ourselves that I call the justice mechanism. The justice mechanism. We humans like it when things are fair. And specifically, in this case, the definition of fair is I got at least as much as everyone else or more. Okay, so the definition, I got at least as much as everyone else or more. If we get a little more, it's fine. If others get a little more, oh, we throw a tantrum. Turns out that this is actually a very juvenile, kind of very immature part of ourselves where this comes from. But since we all have it, we need to learn to manage it. Now, my favorite example of the justice mechanism is a game that the psychologists play called the ultimatum game. So here's what they do. They take people and they sit them down, two people across the table from each other, and they say, okay, you're person A and you're person B. We're going to give person A $100. And person A, you can divide the $100 between you and person B, however you'd like. But here's the trick. Person B gets to then decide if you get the money or if neither of you get the money. So, person A then has to make an interesting choice. Do they divide it up 50-50? Or, hey, wait a minute. I'm the one that gets to choose how the money's divided. And since it's in their best interest to say yes, no matter how I divide it, because they're getting free money, maybe I should keep a little more for myself. Well, in most cases, person A divides the money 50-50. They give $50 to person B. They keep $50. And then person B says, yes, we get the money. And both of them walk away $50 richer. But in some cases, person A gets the bright idea, I should keep a little more for myself. So they might keep $60 and put $40 in front of person B. Let me say that again. They might keep $60 and put $40 in front of person B, or they might keep $70 or $80. Something interesting starts to happen around the 70-30 mark, okay? Kind of around the point where person A is getting twice as much as person B. Person B starts saying, no, neither of us get the money, and they both walk away with no money. Now, what is going on here? What is happening? Because it doesn't make any sense. Okay? It doesn't make logical sense. And what's happening is that person B, when they get less of the money, is looking across the table and saying, I can't stand to see that other SOB get more than me. Now, keep in mind, this is a random psychological experiment where they're just sitting across the table from a stranger. And they're willing to walk away from free money because they can't stand in their gut to see someone getting more than them. So the psychologist said, well, maybe this is only happening because we're doing this in America, where $100 doesn't mean that much. So they went to a third world country where $100 represented a few months of income. And guess what happened? Same thing. Okay, someone would be willing to walk away from what was a month's income because they couldn't stand to see someone else get more than them. Now, I look at this as a great mechanism, okay, that demanded fairness and that demands fairness for us and that keeps us driving toward getting what's ours and getting our fair share. The problem with the mechanism is that it keeps us trapped at the status quo. It keeps us average. And if you're going to play a big game, if you want to play a high income game, You have to get past some of your human chimpanzee mechanisms, and you have to grow into the highest actualized potential that you can. One of the ways that the justice mechanism trips us up is when we play the income comparison game, and where we look at others and we say, that's not fair that they're getting more than me. And then we kind of, you know, we go to our boss and we say, it's not fair that Fred is making more than me for doing the same job. That's not fair. Okay, now it may not be fair. And in fact, this is the kind of thing where I think that, you know, we should be fair and we should treat people fairly. But when it's you, okay, you have to get over this if you want to go to the next level. Because what you need to do is change your focus from doing work to creating value. And what you must do is you must create the maximum value possible. Okay, the maximum value possible. And this requires you often giving away things, doing things for others, and you're not having done for you. Giving away stuff that you would only normally give away if people paid you for it. I have two stories for you. I have a friend, old friend, who approached me a few years back and said, I see that you're successful selling ebooks online. I'd like to do that. And he was a very successful real estate investor. And he said, I'd like to write a book about how to successfully invest in real estate. What should I do to sell it online? And I said, well, the first thing you should do is take your very best technique, okay, the one that has made you the most money, and the one that someone could use immediately, and give it away for free. Okay, make a website where you give it away, make a free report, or just teach it on your website, or make a little video, and use that to attract prospects. And he said, well, I can't give away that for free. That's taken me decades to learn that idea. I would only teach that idea to people that paid me a lot of money. And I said, okay, well, we've got a problem. So what was going on here, right? He couldn't see how giving his very best idea away for free could actually make him more in the long run. He couldn't see over the injustice of having people get for free what took him years to earn. It's a chimpanzee mechanism. It's an animal mechanism. It's not our highest self. Okay, but because we just have it, it automatically comes up, and we know that other people have it, we just say, well, that's the way it is, and I don't want to change it. Another good story that I really like from business is about a restaurant that opened up in the San Francisco area that I read about. And what they would do is you'd go into the restaurant and sit down, and they'd come and put a jug of wine on your table, and they'd put a glass in front of you. If you're a couple of people, they'd put a couple of glasses down, and they'd say, drink as much wine as you want, and at the end, tell your server how many glasses you drank, and we'll bill you for them. In other words, we trust you. Drink as much as you want, and just tell us at the end. And they had a news reporter go and interview the owner of the restaurant. And they said, you know, you realize people are screwing you. They're ripping you off. They're drinking more than they're telling you. And he said, yes, but look out the door. There's a line around the block of people waiting to get in. Okay, so this business owner knew something that most of us don't know. He knew that by getting the short end of the deal in the short term, he'd get the long end of the deal in the long term. Turns out that we humans are very short-term oriented. We're making most of our decisions unconsciously. We're taking most of our actions based on these short-term decisions. And we're not building anything in the long term. Okay? We're instant gratification oriented. We eat foods that taste good, not foods that give us high energy for the next few hours and high levels of health, high levels of immunity to sickness, and high levels of resistance to disease. Okay, so we eat primarily for entertainment. okay, or for how the food feels as we're eating it. We also do a lot of other things that are short-term oriented. And most of the objections that I get when I teach the kinds of ideas that I'm teaching you here in this program are things like, well, I don't want to email someone and contact them because I might offend them. Okay? The chances that you're going to email someone and say, I'm trying to make something big happen with my life, and I'd really like some advice, and I'd like to get your input, I'd like to take you to lunch. The idea that you're going to offend somebody by having a big vision and taking the initiative to reach out are very, very slim. Okay, the chances are like 1 in 1,000, okay, that you'll actually offend them in some way. But not making the decision to do it and then taking the action based on a 1 in 1,000 probability that you'll offend them, and that is just too shameful. You can't offend someone. That's backwards thinking. And it's really not thinking. What it is avoiding rejection in the short term. Okay, so most of the resistance that I get is some form of short-term thinking. Well, what if I do that and I fail? What if people don't like me? What if it doesn't work? What if it doesn't go exactly the way I wanted it to? What if I waste a whole day doing that and it doesn't work out? Well, it's much better than wasting a whole life. Right? It's much better than waking up in 10 years or 20 years and not being where you want to be. So we have to overcome the justice mechanism. We have to overcome this short-term thinking. We have to get on the road to long-term thinking and doing what will create high income down the road. Short-term thinking, short-term decisions, and short-term action, it's essentially a programming, it's an addiction, it's like a disease that traps us at our current level of success. And because everyone's doing it, we don't really get the idea to do anything else. And because when you do something in the short term, right, when you do something now that is for a long-term benefit, it usually doesn't create a big result. Okay? It doesn't create a big result. One of my favorite metaphors, my friend Alex Mondozian taught me, is that there's a species of bamboo tree that grows for 3 years underground before it sprouts. Okay, so could you imagine someone that cultivates these bamboo trees? Could you imagine what their neighbors think? Okay, they go out, they plant a seed, they come out, they water it, they fertilize it, they take care of it, they pull the weeds. For 3 years, and there's no sprout. And everyone would think they were crazy. Well, when this bamboo tree sprouts, it grows as much as 3 feet per day. 3 feet a day. So how could it grow 3 feet per day? Because it grew a huge root system underground. It was all tapped in and ready to go. So when it sprouted, it could grow 3 feet a day, and it can grow something like 90 feet in a month or so's time. And that's the metaphor that we need to keep in mind. As we're working on the long term, it's going to be ugly in the short term. I recently, about 2 months ago, I got on a kind of a deeper kick of my health routine. I went back to some of the books that I've read in the past, and I got some new books about heart health and kind of modern insights on diet and disease. And I decided that I wanted to remove more of the fat from my diet and my partner's diet. But I wanted to do it in a way that we really enjoyed. Okay? So I wanted to figure out a way to take more of the fat and more of the salt out of our diet, but do it in a way where the food actually got better. Well, I knew in order to do that, it was going to require some attention. And I'm no gourmet chef, okay? I figure it out from scratch, and I read recipes, and I try things until I get it to work. And I kind of have fun doing it, but I go through phases where I cook and whatever. Really, what I do is I go through phases where I come up with good recipes that I can make quickly and that'll last for a long time in the refrigerator. That's what I do, truth be told. So I started off, and we both like Indian food, and I've never known how to cook Indian food. I've never made Indian food in my life. So I got a couple of cookbooks. I did research online. I went up to the Indian store and I got a bunch of Indian spices. And I tried to make some Indian food. And I'll tell you what, the first night was pretty funny, right? I made a chana masala and I made a dal with lentils. And the chana masala was, let's just say it was interesting. Okay, it was bitter and it was strong and it was too spicy and it was just too much. And the dal I wound up burning, so it had a charcoal taste to it, which wasn't exactly very pleasant. If you would have looked at it in the short term, okay, if you would have tasted these two dishes, you would have said, you should probably give up on the cooking and stick with the online information products. Okay, in fact, you would have almost certainly said that. But I tried again. Okay, I came back a couple of days later, and I tried again. And you know what? The next one wasn't quite as bad. It wasn't super amazing or anything, but, you know, we had a couple servings of it. It wasn't as bad. The next one got a little bit better. And, you know, probably 7 or 8 iterations later, this is just last week, in fact, I made my first dal that when my partner Annie and I ate it, we looked at each other and we realized, this is it. Okay, I've crossed the tipping point. I've now figured it out. And it was one of the best Indian dishes that either of us had ever had. And that one, when it went into the refrigerator, instead of sitting there in the bowl until we threw it away, all of it got eaten, and I crossed a tipping point. Now, again, it took me a couple of months, and it took me, you know, whatever, weekly tries at this with various combinations of things, spices, and screwing things up, and burning food. And if you would have caught me anywhere along the way, in fact, if you would have actually had the dish that I made the week before the good one, you probably would have tasted it and said, you know, it's all right, but it's just, you know, stick with the internet marketing of information products. But I had in my mind that I was going to figure this one out. And you know what? I would have stuck with it forever if that's what it would have taken, because I set my mind to something, right? And I knew that working hard in the short term to get a long-term result was really going to pay off. And now I made another Indian dish last night that was a different one, and it was excellent. And I made a little bit because I'm learning we don't want to throw it away when it's not that good. And we ate it all. And now I'm learning the secret, getting the magic combination of the cooking and the ingredients and the spices and the whole thing. Okay? You look crazy when you're starting out. You look like a mess. People will laugh at you. Okay? The people around you will say, that's not going to work. You must be kidding. But you have to remember that you're bamboo. Okay? You're not an alfalfa sprout that sprouts the next day. You're bamboo, and you have to build your network underground. And you will look stupid. You'll look crazy. You'll look short-sighted. You'll look like a dreamer for weeks, for months, maybe as long as years in your life. But if you follow the path that winners have taken and you identify your natural talent, you identify opportunities in the future that are going to grow, okay, you connect them, you build a bridge, then you develop your talent into strength. Okay, you develop that connector between your talent and that opportunity, and then you create more and more and more value. At some point, you're going to cross the tipping point. At some point, you're going to go to where you're more in demand than you can handle, where people are pursuing you, and where your income is going up dramatically. I could sit here and tell you one story after another about how this is the way it works, okay, to show it to you. If you read Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill, you'll find he says that the greatest success of the world's most successful people, it often happened right after their greatest failure, but they were persistent. And most people, when they run into a failure, they stop and they say, that doesn't work. And they give up and they move on to the next thing. They play success like they play a game of craps or roulette inside the casino. And that's why it doesn't work out for them. So very, very, very important to overcome your justice mechanism. Very important to think long term. to get into action, take a long-term perspective. Now let's talk a little bit more about value versus work. One of the things that I'm encouraging you to do here is to create more and more value. One of the questions that I like to ask myself is, what is value? Okay, what is value? It's worth writing on a post-it note and putting on your computer monitor or computer screen or bulletin board and just kind of look at it every day and ask yourself, what is value? How do I create it? And I asked Wyatt Woodsmall, my good friend and mentor, I asked a whole bunch of people about what is value. And he said, value is a noun, and it actually was originally a verb. Valuing something is a process. So you need to realize that value is the result of a process of valuing, and that human beings are the ones that are doing the valuing. So value is the result, the emergent of a process that happens inside of human beings. And certain people value, okay, they value certain things more than other things. And they value moving towards some things and getting some things, and they value moving away from other things and avoiding the loss of other things. And as you develop your talent into strength, and as you put it to work to create value, you need to be looking around at what is valuable to others, and what do others that you're working with, that you're creating products and services for, what do they find valuable? You have to tune your mind to a different frequency. Tune your mind to the frequency of value and the creation of value. This is very, very different from the way most people think. Okay, most of us are walking around thinking about how to get for ourselves. How do I get for me? Not on how to create the most possible value for the other person. Now, when I teach business and I teach marketing, I actually give lots of exercises and so forth. And one of the things that I do is I ask people to talk to at least one potential customer a day and ask them, what's your biggest fear and frustration? What's your biggest want and aspiration? And after you've talked to dozens of them, you'll understand how their value system is working, what they're valuing moving toward, what they're valuing moving against, what they're value moving away from. You'll understand how they're valuing what it is that you do. And then you can go to work and you can create what it is that they want and create things to help them avoid what they want to avoid. Most people, when I say this, they go, well, I already know what they want. Okay, and that's my first sign that someone doesn't get it. Okay, it's my first sign that someone doesn't get it when they say, oh, I already know what they want. Or I know what I want and everybody's the same and they all want the same thing I do. Because it turns out that our guesses about what creates value are usually very different from what people say that they want and what people say that creates value, which is actually even different from what they pay money for. So over time, you have to identify what it is that someone in your chosen area, okay, with your talents, that's developing them into strengths, what do they do to create the most value? Okay, so we're switching from work to value. And then put your focus on the creation of more and more value, not the getting of more and more income. So remember, success is an indirect game. We win when we create more value and we get income as almost a byproduct or an offshoot of creating maximum value. When we focus on getting, it limits our value creating ability by a factor of 10 or 100. When we focus only on creating value and we're not focused on the income, then we don't have the justice mechanism come up as much. We don't get stopped. We don't get, oh, I feel like people are taking advantage of me. It's just a game of create maximum value, maximum value. And we switch from using income as the goal to using income as just a scorekeeper or a measure of the value we've created. Okay, so money now becomes a measure of the value created, not work, not the main objective, and so forth. Zig Ziglar, the famous sales trainer, right? He said, you can have anything you want if you help enough other people get what they want. And you got to help them get what they want first and realize in the beginning it's going to be unfair. It's not going to feel right. It's going to feel like people are taking advantage of you. But you have to master the art of creating value and creating more and more and more value and getting it out there into the world. If you're not making as much money as you'd like to make, don't focus on making money. Focus on developing your talent into a strength that's valuable in a growing business, in a growing industry, and then go to work creating more value. Go to work creating value and mastering the creation of value in your domain. I also have a technique that I teach in business that I call move the free line. And the idea here is take all your best ideas and give them away for free. Create videos, create free reports, create webinars, create trainings, and give them away. And the more valuable stuff you give away, the more you will attract more and more customers. It's counterintuitive. I've given away what I've calculated as being millions or even tens of millions of dollars worth of training for free. And most people would think I was crazy. But I made millions of dollars in sales as a result. So I might say, well, you know, I gave away $10 million worth of free training, but I made $3 million in sales. So you know what? That's not too bad. Okay? That's about moving the free line. But you got to get over the justice mechanism in order to do it. And remember, the key functions of value creation in business are the things that meet customer needs. So creating innovative products, doing marketing and sales, and of course, taking responsibility for delivering results, management, leadership, managing projects, etc. And those are the key functions generally where the value is created in business. So you want to go to work there. Now, it's important that as you get into creating value, that you get yourself to behave consistently. We talked about this idea of inevitability thinking. What conditions do I need to put in place so that I do the thing that I want to do and I have the result that I want to have ultimately emerge? So there are a few kind of key things that you want to be doing on a consistent basis, and there are a few key standards you want to be holding yourself to. And I'm going to teach these to you right now. And what I want you to do is I want you to ask yourself, what would I need to do so that it forced me to do these things? What condition would I need to put in place so that it forced me to do these things? So the first one is timeliness, being on time. Okay, I don't care what personality type you are. I don't care what your natural disposition is. Be on time, okay, if at all possible. All the judges already know this, okay? They always show up 5 minutes early or 10 minutes early anyway, right? But if you're not on time, be on time. And if you don't deliver projects on time, okay, learn how to do it on time. And if you're not going to be on time, communicate that you're not going to be on time. Next, consistency. Humans value consistency, so you need to deliver it. Consistent results, consistent communication, consistent emotional tone. Okay, consistency. People like things that are consistent. It's one of the reasons why these big giant franchises like McDonald's or these huge multinational companies like Starbucks do so well. It's a consistent experience. So when you're working in business, practice consistency. Next would be quality. High quality. Don't just deliver the bare minimum. Do a little bit extra. Okay? Make it perfect. Add that little flourish or flair that lets someone know that this thing is built with intention. It's made with quality. Okay? Now, you can do this in a lot of different ways, but you want people to get that feeling of, ah, yes, this is right. Whether it's a piece of electronics that it feels heavy in your hand and it looks really solid, built with quality, where it's an experience when you're going to a service business. I mentioned earlier that I've been cooking on the Indian food, one of the first little spice stores I went to a couple of months ago. I went in there, I started asking questions, and the guy immediately started taking things out and giving them to me for free. He was like, try one of these, and try one of these, and here you can have this. And he started treating me like I was a friend. And it immediately made an impression. I realized, I like this guy, I like this store, and I like what they're doing here. Now, right down the block is kind of the big famous store, okay, the one that everybody goes to and talks about. But I don't like that store very much because when I go in there, I don't have a good experience with the people. I like the other little store where the guy was really nice to me because he gave me a high-quality experience. And I've been back, and guess what happened when I went back? There was a different guy working there, and he was giving me and my partner stuff too. Okay? Very important, quality. So timeliness, consistency, and quality. These are some of the elements that make up professionalism. These are some of the things that we really need to focus on if we want to create huge success, huge value for other people, and turn our talent into a high income. Okay, so now I'd like you to do an exercise. And the exercise is about identifying what it is that's high value creation in the business and industry that you're going toward in the future. Okay, so here's what I'd like you to do. I would like you to talk to three experts who are in the industry that you would like to get into or grow into, and three customers who buy the products and services of that industry. And what I'd like you to do is ask each of them two questions. Okay, so three experts that work in the industry that you're considering going into or that you're growing into, and three customers who buy products or services in that industry. And I want you to ask them these two questions. Number one, what's your biggest problem or frustration? And what's your biggest problem or frustration? And number two, what's your biggest desire or want? And what you're trying to get at is, what do they want to overcome? What's the frustration, the problem, the challenge that they want to overcome that would make their life better? And what's the result or the outcome or the desire that they have? How do they want their life or their situation or their experience to look, to feel? What do they want to have happen that would make their life great, that they would find valuable? And when you ask people what they are frustrated with, what their problem is, what they want to move away from, and what they want or what they desire, what they want to move toward, that's when you get the insights that lead you to be able to create value. So I want you to find three experts in your industry. You can do this as you're talking to potential reference group members, mastermind members, mentors, however you want. Three customers. Okay, so you're going to have to do a little research here, maybe find them online, ask friends if they purchase things in that industry. I want you to ask three of each, what's your biggest frustration? What's your biggest problem? And what's your biggest desire, aspiration, want? Okay, what do you want to get away from and what do you want to move towards? What's the reality you want to create? And this will help you start figuring out what the direction you can go in is. So inside a business, if you're working in a company, you're going to want to help these experts to clear away their problems and their blocks and solve, get what they want so that they can be more productive. And you want to figure out what customers want and want to avoid so that you can help align with those things. So let me be very clear here. Helping people solve their problems and avoid pain and helping people get what they want, the specifics, the outcome, the results, the relief, the specific situational results that they want, this is the road to creating high value. This is what value creation is about. It's not about work. It's not about doing what other people are doing. It's about asking people yourself, what are you frustrated with? what's the problem you'd like to overcome and avoid, and asking them what they want. What's the outcome they want? What do they wish the situation looked like? What do they desire? And then helping create that outcome for them. That's where you'll create the most value. So write down those questions, meet three people, three experts, and three consumers, three people who purchase products or services in your industry, and ask them these questions and use them as the basis for creating massive value through your products, through your marketing, through your innovation, through your project management, through delivering what it is that they want. Do that, and I will see you in the next session of Turning Your Talent into Income.